From WBUR Boston, I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. New survey says 86% of Americans think it's okay for male athletes to participate in sports even if they are openly gay. But a majority of the same respondents, 68%, said it would hurt an athlete's career to be openly gay. And they say athletes who are gay or suspected of lose out on product endorsements. For gay athletes, it's a mixed message, to say the least. Little wonder, then, among the some 3,500 men playing in the four major professional sports, there are no openly gay athletes. Tonight on Point, gays in sports, what Americans really think and why. Join the conversation. What do you make of America's mixed message for gay athletes? Are you a gay athlete keeping a secret? Or have you come out to your teammates? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is John Wertheim, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He wrote the article, Gays in Sports, a Poll. He's also the author of Transition Game, How Hoosiers Went Hip-Hop. Hello, John.
Hi there.
So I guess this poll tells us that Americans feel they're more accepting of openly gay athletes. Are there some mixed messages, though? I was saying earlier, it seems like when you got to dig a little deeper, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of exactly what I read into these results, where there seemed to be a sort of knee-jerk acceptance, where if you just sort of throw out a vague general question about gays in sports, then I mean, to the extent that 86% is a number that we should be happy with, you know, there is this overwhelming majority that's comfortable. But as the questions get more specific, the answers really get very, very sort of ambivalent and ambiguous at the same time. It seems like people don't even know where. I mean, everybody knows that sort of homosexuality in general is this polarizing issue, but a lot of people don't seem to know where they even stand.
Well, it's also, they talk about in the poll how having a gay player on the team might hurt the team overall, and there was a pretty large correlation there. People thought that would be the case, but can you tell from the poll how they thought it would hurt the team?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's sort of these vague terms about sort of team chemistry, and I mean, at some level, I don't know how different some of the mentality is from the Army. You know, it's sort of don't ask, don't tell, because it's bad for troop morale. It was sort of unclear whether this was commercial, whether this was going to sort of hurt the team commercially, but I think more of it's just sort of people had this perception it would hurt the team in terms of sort of a esprit de corps kind of thing.
Okay. How about the differences between the interpretation of male and female athletes?
It's interesting. There is sort of this, and I don't know if it's because of athletes like Martina Navratilova and Billie Jean, that sort of there is more of a history of active female athletes coming out of the closet,
that, or being outed of the closet,
in
actually.
Cases, yeah, exactly. In other cases, there is sort of seem to be this, 58% here. Women's sports are typically more accepting of gay athletes, and I think that at some level, maybe it's because a lot of these women's sports are individual sports where you don't have this team component. I mean, I think the team component versus the individual component is really pretty significant for a number of reasons.
Well, is the locker room one of them?
The locker room is one of them. I think the other thing, though, is sort of this notion of a home team. It's sort of the tennis tour or the golf tour or figure skate. They can sort of, you know, they're in Topeka one night and Grand Rapids the next. There isn't this sort of you're representing the community and you're sort of playing in front of these same fans for half your games. And then you're right, that the locker room and sort of the bus rides and the whole sort of fact that you have teammates and sort of a team dynamic is obviously different too.
What effect do you expect this poll is going to have on players and how they think about this issue?
Well, I mean, I think the fact that the results were so all over the place doesn't really get us. I mean, if I were a gay athlete, to thinking about coming out of the closet, I'm not sure which way the results cut. And
yeah.
I think you mentioned it in the intro that I think the sort of the commercial implications, which is becoming more and more a factor in professional sports, those are pretty sobering, where, you know, something like 21% of the people surveyed would be less inclined to purchase a product if it were endorsed by a gay athlete. You know, that's a big, if you're a marketer and you're going to alienate a fifth of your customers right off the bat, you know, that's a pretty lamentably high number.
Well, how did that play out, for example, someone like Martina Navratilova?
Yeah, it's interesting. She actually, ironically enough, had a earlier this month signed an endorsement with a gay travel company. Said it was the first time being gay actually helped her marketability. But no, she was the best tennis player in the world for a long time and didn't have endorsements. And you know, it wasn't because she came from Eastern Europe. That's improved for her, and it's ironic now she's, you know, in her late 40s and still playing and is doing better in terms of endorsements than she was when she was the best player in the world. But no, she took a huge commercial hit by coming out of the closet.
You know what I want to see now? I want to see a survey of the players.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think sport to sport it would be interesting. You know, I don't think it's any great secret that sports locker rooms and sort of the sports culture in general is not this sort of bastion of progressive thought. It's sort of this, you know, for any number of reasons, there's really I find sort of this acceptance of homophobia, that it's just sort of okay to be outwardly homophobic in locker. And I've, you know, we had spoke to some athletes for this story, mm-hmm. and the results were all over the map. I mean, I quoted Ken Griffey, the baseball player in the story, saying, I mean, I could care less if a guy can play, he can play.
Right.
But we had other athletes, and this wasn't any sort of, you know, feel free to use my name. There wasn't any sort of shame or second thought in this of, you know, I don't approve of that lifestyle and I wouldn't be comfortable if my teammate were gay.
Right. Okay. I'd like to bring another guest into the conversation now. Eric Anderson is a professor of sociology at SUNY Stony Brook. He conducted a 6-year study on openly gay and closeted gay male athletes in the U.S. and Canada through all levels of sports. He's the author of In the Game, Gay Athletes and the Cult of Masculinity. Welcome, Eric.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can I ask you to start with, tell us your story. You come to this from personal experience.
Indeed. I came out of the closet as the nation's first openly gay high school coach in 1993. And because of the experience that I had, which was also a mixed bag, I expected my study to find that sports were, at all levels, you know, the most homophobic environment. I expected to find that openly gay athletes, if they existed at all, would be harassed and discriminated against and marginalized on their teams. And quite remarkably, I found just the opposite. Of all of the openly gay athletes that I've talked to at the high school and collegiate levels, and of course, again, you've said there's none that are open at the, you know, the major level of sports, or the mm-hmm. top four at least.
Right.
All of the athletes have found either one of two situations. Either they go into a don't ask, don't tell policy, where their teammates say, look, we know you're gay, that's fine, let's just not talk that much about it. In that aspect, it's something of an open secret. Very, very similar to the fact that there are some gay athletes in the NFL who are out to select members of their teams, as well as the NHL.
But right.
It's just sort of within closed ranks, right? The public doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
But the other half celebrated their athlete's sexuality. They reveled in it. They took joy in it. And these athletes almost all reported that their athletic performance improved, and their teams said that it had absolutely no ill effect on their level of team cohesion. Now, I should point out that we don't really know if increased cohesion, you know, this esprit de corps of the of athletes, we don't really know if that translates into better performance in the first place. I mean, that's just sort of a grand myth. But the point is, you know, the notion is that a gay athlete will disrupt that team chemistry. There's all kinds of things going on teams that can disrupt a team's chemistry.
Can I ask you a personal question about your own experience? What happened
Sure.
when you came out as a high school coach in 1993?
Well, you have to remember that I came out in 1993, and in terms of, I call gay years like dog years, except for they're 10 to 1. We make so many gains culturally and institutionally with each passing year that comparing 1993 to 2005 is absolutely an unfair comparison. But I came out of the closet in a very conservative county as an openly gay high school coach. All of the athletes on my team supported me. Not one athlete quit the team. But, you know, there was harassment from other athletes, particularly football players. There were some parents who were upset, and the administration wasn't all too supportive. Throughout the 4 years that I continued to coach that school, however, we began to change the attitudes of those at our team.
Well, interesting. You had the 4 years to you had the opportunity of those 4 years, because that hasn't always been the case. Administration and parents in other places have not allowed that to take place and those changes. Were you lucky, do you think, or was it just the area you were in?
I was successful. The one thing we have to remember when it comes to gays in sports or anything else that is perceived to be a distraction, the number one thing that athletes care about is winning. And I was a good coach. And that's the other thing I found with my athletes, is that almost all of the athletes at present who are coming out of the closet, virtually all of them, are their top athletes on the teams. They're the best in their states. I've had, of my sample of just 40 openly gay athletes at the high school and collegiate level, I had 4 collegiate national champions.
Winners win.
So in other words, right, if you're good, nothing else really matters. but I am finding now that a second flight of athletes are coming out of the closet. Not quite the bench warmers yet, but those who are still valuable but not as valuable, they're starting to come out of the closet, and they're finding that they, too, are accepted. They're not marginalized. They're not beat up. No gay athlete in the United States has been beat up, to my knowledge, since 1995, and the individual that was beat up was actually heterosexual. So, you know, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of high school and collegiate athletes, and nobody is reporting these, you know, extreme ostracization that they all fear. And that's what this is really about. This is about fear. Athletes grow up in what I call a cult of masculinity. From the time they're very young, they're indoctrinated into a system in which if they don't act just like the coach wants, you know, they act to the extreme epitome of masculinity, they're not selected or they don't make the next round of competition. Hmm. Only those who overly conform to the sporting ethos make it to the next level. And the competition is so intense that by the time they get to the professional level of sport, they are so indoctrinated in this cult that they can't see themselves living any other way.
Yeah, they're
and
right.
That's why they don't come out of the closet even after retiring.
They're out on the edge. Eric, stay with us. We're talking tonight about gays in sports, past, present, and future. And we're looking at how attitudes have changed over the years, if they've really changed. The new survey says the reason there's so little coverage of gays in sports is that America is not ready to accept gay athletes. How does that square with what you think? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. This week, the documentary Ring of Fire about gay boxer Emile Griffith debuted on the USA Network. In this clip from the film, boxer Jose Torres and author Charles Kaiser talk about Emile Griffith's open secret.
Most fighters believe that Emile was gay, most boxers, and they would not say it openly.
In 1962, you would expect everybody to protect the secret. I mean, there wasn't any other way to deal with this situation except that, and that would be, you know, I mean, as did all of the aides to all of the gay politicians of the 1950s and 60s. There wasn't anything else they could have done if he wanted a career as a boxer.
That was a clip from Ring of Fire. We're talking tonight about gays in sports. Is America ready for an openly gay athlete? Jackie Robinson broke the color line. What's it going to take for a gay athlete to step forward? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're speaking with John Wertheim, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He wrote the article Gays in Sports, a Poll for the magazine. And we have with us Eric Anderson, professor of sociology at SUNY Storybrooke and author of In the Game, Gay Athletes and the Cult of Masculinity. I'd like to bring into the conversation now from Miami former Major League Baseball player Billy Beane. He broke into the major leagues with the Detroit Tigers and went on to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. Billy Beane came out publicly in 1999. He's the author of Going the Other Way, Lessons from a Life in and Out of Major League Baseball. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you, Jennifer. Glad to be with you.
Walk us through what happened. Why did you decide to come out, first of all, and why did you decide to wait until after you retired?
Well, I guess, first of all, but at that time in 1999, I had been out of baseball for about 2.5 years, and it really wasn't a planned situation. It was something where I was becoming more visible in the business environment in Miami Beach, and I basically just got tired of having to sort of tell one person one thing and another person another, and I had designs on maybe getting back into baseball in a front office situation for a while, and I think that helped me perpetuate my secret, and then I was working in radio and TV, little things like that. And I think the freedom of it was the inspiration that helped me do that. But as a player, I can honestly say there was never a moment where I anticipated or thought that would be the right choice. And I was struggling with my sexuality for the most for most of my career, I played 10, you know, seasons as a professional, and, you know, I certainly wasn't even on complete comfortable terms within my own self, and so to think that I would come forward and share it on such a grand scale, it just seemed way too overwhelming for me at the time.
But you also said that even after you left baseball and you were considering a job somewhere in the sports field, that you didn't want your secret out.
I knew from my experience that is, there's no place for openly gay or possibly lesbian, you know, people to be involved in the sport of baseball. I've heard
why.
Since I've come out, I've heard mostly from people who work in and around baseball who are not on the field. And even them, they're constantly saying, you know what, Jennifer, it's really not a certainty. It's just a fear of the unknown. I think there's never been a major front office, you know, position holder who's ever been openly gay. There's never been, you know, a player on the field to do that, you know, publicly. And the reason is because, you know, by the time you get to the big leagues and, you know, you have learned how to survive and in many ways as an athlete, as a person against intense competition and just in that light, you know, to complicate your career when there is no guarantee for time or amount of money you're going to make, it just, from a common sense standpoint, it's probably the toughest decision someone who is gay would ever have to make. Now,
what were you most afraid of, Billy? Being dropped or your teammates? Or
I think that, honestly, for myself, changing the entire dynamic of my life, having to confront it on such a level that, and you know, maybe hard for you to understand, and one of the things I tried to share from my experience the most is when any player is ostracized or singled out for something that is other than what happens on the field, for whatever reason that is, you change the energy of the karma of your place within that group. It is extremely difficult to put that aside. And for this topic, which we have seen with, you know, the way the rumors surrounded around Piazza or what Sandy Koufax did when someone had leaked some kind of, you know, silly rumor about his sexuality when his book came out, players would jump to the moment to deny, because they know that could change. Whether it's true or not is a whole other subject. But for just understanding what it would take to coexist, and I think that, you know, as a team sport, in a team sport situation, the distraction is something that, you know, front office personnel, they don't know what's going to happen either. I think publicly they might be politically correct in saying that it's okay, I don't have a problem with it, but there's a reason why no male has come forward in the four major team sports. I mean, it's not dumb luck. It's a reason, because they know that it would be a situation that could be, you know, possibly detrimental to their career.
What kind of man do you think Billy is going to be the first?
Well, I think I hope, and I have been a staunch supporter for anybody who is ready to do that, but I hope that it's somebody, aside from the, you know, the character they would have, you know, as a person, someone who has achieved success, is in the midst of a, you know, guaranteed long-term contract where the fans, the front office, everyone would have to give him a little slack and let the furor of the revelation die down, because you have to understand what, you know, for a player to come forward like that, they would have to understand exactly their life is going to be examined, you know, 24 hours a day. Who are they friends with? Who is their roommate? Who do they live with? Who are they having lunch with? And it has nothing to do with what's going on the field. And heaven forbid if someone goes through a slump or they drop a ball or strike out at the wrong time. You know, fans, the built-in, you know, phenomenon of baseball is you play in enemy territory half the time.
And it just gives them more ammunition.
It's a handle. I mean,
right.
it would be, unless the person would have to be tremendous character. It's a difficult, example to compare with Jackie Robinson. His greatness and his courage in that civil situation he was put in. Not only did he have Branch Rickey's support, and ultimately, you know, he won over the guys on his team, but he did have someone well known in his ownership behind him. But the one big difference, I think, is most people don't think that you are born gay. And I think unless you are and you understand that you are, they think it's a choice. So you can't you can't blame somebody because they're, you know, Caucasian, African American, Negro, Asian, you know, whatever their race is by birth. But
so this is an education issue. I'm going to have to stop you there, Billy. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, I appreciate you presenting the topic, and you know, we're hoping that somebody will help break down, you know, the stereotypes, and that's what I've been trying to do since with my book, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed and trying to be strong role models and be visible, which we've never been able to be before in the sports world.
Thank you, Billy. Billy played Major League Baseball from 1987 through to 1995. He broke into the major leagues with the Detroit Tigers, ended up with the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres, and he came out publicly in 1999. John Wortham, if I can put a question to you, Jackie Robinson, why isn't this issue of coming out of the closet one of the great thus far missed opportunities for a player? I mean, I know there are risks involved with this, but on the other hand, talk about a way to go down in the history books.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, Professor Anderson's research is certainly encouraging at some level, though it's not the, you know, though we're not talking about the pros with the commercial pressures.
But they will be the pros.
Yeah, you know, I mean, my instinct is with you, though, that for as much backlash as a player would get from the, you know, morons when he plays on the road and from the, you know, from some teammates that might not be so enlightened, this person who, you know, the first athlete to come out, and I think it is going to, I mean, it is an eventuality, it is going to happen, the first athlete, professional athlete to come out while he's playing, I think will have this incredible place in history.
Yeah.
And I think there'll be so much support from people, you know, who just admire what he's done. And I'm not talking about sort of an icon in the gay community or anything like that. I'm just talking about from sort of general, you know, people who will be interested.
Mm-hmm.
And, I would think that would offset a lot of this, the sort of negative backlash that he would get.
I'd like to take a call now from Salem, Massachusetts. Leo is on the line. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a comment or a question for our guest?
Yeah, my comment is this, is that I think a leader in athletics should come out publicly for no other reason except to pave the way for kids. And it makes it okay for the kids who are questioning their sexuality to be like a hero, like Jackie Robinson was a hero.
I'd like to throw that to you, Eric Anderson, professor of sociology.
This has really been a social movement that's occurred from the ground up. It's the kids who are coming out and demanding their equality, not the administrators, not the coaches, not those involved at the institutional level of sports. So this is really the kids fighting for equality. And by the time those kids get into the positions of power, of course, they're going to view things entirely different. But I want to add that we do need to change this victimization model and realize that the first openly gay athlete that comes out of the closet might be a savvy up and down from the majors, minors, baseball player, a no-name person with no contracts, no endorsements. The minute he comes out of the closet, overnight, book contracts, movie deals, he's on Oprah, he's on the front cover of every sports magazine in the world. He has every gay sponsor in the world lined up to sign him, from Absolut Vodka to Subaru. This individual would find himself a media superstar overnight.
And you know what
so
that says to me,
to
Eric?
We do have to question this.
If all of that is true and nobody's done it,
then why?
Yeah, what is going
and
on?
That is why I've titled my book "And the Cult of Masculinity," because they are so afraid, and they have been in this what I call an orthodox system for so long. They can't see themselves living in any other way, despite the fact that you might put that huge carrot in front of their face. That's why they don't even come out after retiring. That's why Billy Beane is an exception to the rule. I mean, it's amazing how closeted. I've talked to players who have been out for 20 years, and they said, "Well, I didn't want to come out in the closet when I was playing because I was afraid of losing my sponsorships." And I say, "Well, you're 65 years old now. Why don't you come out of the closet?" They can't see themselves living an open life, which is why it's truly going to take another generation before this is a non-issue.
Okay, I'd like to bring another guest into the conversation now. Nora Beck is coming to us from Portland, Oregon. She's a professor at Lewis and Clark College and is an advisor to the NCAA on Gay gay and lesbian issues. A student athlete herself, she played basketball at Barnard College and was team captain and an All-American. Welcome, Professor.
Welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we're happy to have you. What are you advising the NCAA about gay and lesbian issues?
Well, I brought it to the forefront. In 2000, I was going to the NCAA convention to vote on behalf of Lewis and Clark College as the college's faculty athletic representative. And there I went to the diversity panel, very happy to do so, just waiting to find out what they were going to say about gay and lesbian athletes, knowing that I was surrounded by closeted gay and lesbian coaches and players and administrators. And nothing was spoken. Diversity for the NCAA at that time in 2000 meant ethnic, racial diversity. So at that time, I went to the microphone and I explained
that. I knew you were going to say that. No
yeah,
one else spoke.
I went to the microphone as a good bordered student would, and I said, well, wait a minute. What about sexual diversity, NCAA? And that was followed by silence. I was shaking at that point when I sat back down to my colleagues from Pacific Lutheran, big football schools, and Winfield College. And then I started a letter-writing campaign demanding that...
Can I take you back there a minute, Nora?
I'm sorry?
Can I take you back to that moment?
Yes.
You're
please.
At the microphone. You ask, what about diversity on sexuality? And
yes.
The room is silent?
Yeah, the room was silent.
Mm-hmm. And so you walked back to your seat through this silence and they just moved on?
Yeah, they moved on. The panel didn't respond. There was no one on the panel to respond. Then, you know, slowly a member of the NCAA came to me and said, we're working on this, Nora, don't you worry. And then one of my colleagues suggested, you know, start a letter-writing campaign. And at that point, I have to say the NCAA responded quickly. They published my letter in the NCAA News, and then they had me be the first organizer of a session at the NCAA convention devoted to gay and lesbian athletes.
Well, what is your concern? What do you want? What did you want to talk about?
I'd like to approach this as a teacher. I've been teaching in the college environment for close to 20 years. And what happens is the NCAA is very concerned with student-athlete welfare. Well, you can't possibly be good in the classroom when you're afraid on the field. And that's what these students are. They are called names. They're called faggots, dykes, constantly, not only by opposite teams, but also by the fans. And when you're at 18, 19 years old, this is a very scary proposition. I found my own life that I was very afraid that people would find out of my sexuality. I think it led to perhaps too much drinking and other behavior that was not good for me.
And you kept it a secret?
Yeah, I kept it a secret. I knew some of the people on the team knew, and eventually when I was a senior, certainly my coach knew, but I didn't really get much support.
What difference would it have made for you if you could have come clean?
It would have made every possible difference. I think that I, as a result of staying in the closet and being afraid, I got depressed. Certainly my grades in school were not as good as they could have been. I'm sure they affected my grades. I was just generally unhappy.
Nora, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for your time.
Nora Beck came to us from Portland, Oregon. She's professor of music at Lewis and Clark College and advisor to the NCAA on gay and lesbian issues. A student athlete herself as well. She played basketball at Barnard College and was team captain and an All-American. Eric Anderson, Nora's experience and what she's saying there about what's going on in colleges sounds quite different from what you have found.
Indeed, it's a little contradictory, but it may not be that much so. The use of the word fag as a general nonspecific insult is the number one form of insult from one male to another. Yet when you ask high schoolers if they mean it, most of them say no.
What they mean to say is you're weak.
Exactly. Now, yeah. I'm not saying I agree with the use of the term. It still creates a culture of homophobia. But the reality is when the athletes come out to their teams, they find much more sensitivity by their teammates who say, oh, I don't mean it that way. And so – what they're really finding is that athletes, and this is what's amazing about this, is athletes judge the level of homophobia on their team via that casual use of the word fag. But when they come out of the closet, they realize that the level of homophobia they thought existed wasn't so, because all of their teammates decide they're not going to, they often don't use the word fag in direct reference to them or around them. It doesn't mean they wipe it out of their vocabulary entirely, of course. So really what we have here, again, is a situation built on fear.
Okay, stay with us, Eric. We're going to take a short pause here. We're discussing gays in sports and the new survey that reveals some conflicting attitudes about how much has changed about American feelings on this topic over the years. Are you a gay athlete keeping a secret, or have you told your teammates? What would you do if a person beside you insulted a gay athlete at a sporting event? Would you be quiet? Would you speak up? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about attitudes about gays in sports. At the baseball steroid hearing last month on Capitol Hill, former Major League slugger Mark McGwire made a comment that implied that he knew of gay players in baseball.
I do not sit in judgment of other players, whether it deals with their sexual preference, their marital problems, or other personal habits.
Would you applaud a gay athlete who stepped forward? Can gay athletes be role models for children? Is America ready, do you think, for gay athletes to say, just deal? Are we long overdue? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're speaking tonight with John Wertheim, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. His article, Gays in Sports, a Poll, appeared in last week's issue. He's also author of Transition Game, How Hoosiers Went Hip-Hop. And we are speaking with Eric Anderson, professor of sociology at SUNY Storybook and author of... Oh, dear. What was it you wrote there, Eric?
And that's SUNY Stony Brook for all of the Long Islanders out there.
Okay. You wrote, I'm thinking of In the Game, Gay Athletes.
Yes.
and the Cult of Masculinity.
As well as an autobiography.
I'd like to bring into the conversation now Dave Copay. From 1964 to 1972, he was a running back in the NFL. He played for the 49ers, Lions, Redskins, Saints, and the Packers. He is the first professional athlete of any sport to come out, and he did so after his retirement in 1975. He's the author of the best-selling autobiography, The Dave Copay Story. Dave, welcome.
Nice to be here. Nice to be with you guys.
What did you fear from your teammates had you come out while you were still a player?
Well, I don't know if I was fearing so much any violence or... I was fearing... I wasn't the one who was able to handle being gay, you know? I wasn't comfortable with being who I was because I saw such negative images all the time. And I think it was more fear of maybe myself, you know.
That's exactly what...
It might sound kind of a little weird, but that's...
It doesn't, and it's actually exactly what Billy Beane said to us earlier.
Oh,
that
okay.
He was struggling with his own self-image, and was it a matter for you of not feeling strong enough in your confidence in your sexuality?
Well, yes, and from the early onset, even in college, I decided I kind of started out as a real whirlwind as a sophomore in college and got starting as a Rose Bowl team, and then not lettered as a junior, and then decided, wait a minute, I better get tough and really play the game like it should be played. And what motivated with me then even was the love of my one of my fraternity brothers to get his eye and be held in high esteem, and so I mean it was all kind of evening the bar, so to speak, and trying to be just as good as the next guy. And once I realized that I was, and I was going to be able to be as tough, and then I went on to be, you know, make the team with the 49ers, I think I was always then kind of look forward to the individual competition, the one-on-one drills, to see if you measured up. Now, I know that's kind of a primitive way to say it, but that's the way it was. You know?
What does a player risk, do you think, even now in 2005, by coming out of the closet when they're still playing?
Well, money-wise, I think that the owners still haven't shown a very, very much of a support system for a gay athlete. If there was one, I think they probably would almost do anything to get rid of them, so it wouldn't cause that friction in the locker room that they think it's going to cause. You know,
really, it's a hot potato kind of thing.
Well, like Mark McGwire, you know, said. I don't make sit in judgment of one's sexual orientation or whether it was, or someone's marital problems or some other personal problems. They always put us gays in the personal problems realm, right?
Right. It's problem. It's not just a way of being.
Right. Instead of letting us be who the hell we are, you know, it's like they want to create this problem. It was like. Like when I first spoke out, it was, you know, gays don't procreate, they recruit, you know, that whole business. And I had to be the one out there refuting those hateful comments by Anita Bryant, you know.
Right. But now you're out and able to do so. Dave, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dave Coppé came to us from Los Angeles. He's a retired NFL running back from 1964 to 1972. He was the first professional athlete to announce publicly that he was gay, and he did so in 1975. I'd like to go to the phones now from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joe, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question and a comment.
Go ahead.
One question was, why do gays have to come out at all? It seems like it's a private issue, and they should be able to keep it as a private issue. And my comment is that they always make people feel that if they don't accept it, they're the ones with the problem. They're the homophobic. Your guest even called them morons. We're labeled as intolerant. And it's something that if I don't believe in, I don't feel I should have it forced upon me. And the last caller that you talked to said that he doesn't want to be stopped being who he is. And mm-hmm. I don't feel that I'm stopping anybody from being who they are, but I feel that they're imposing their beliefs on me. And if I don't believe it, again, I'm being labeled as intolerant.
Okay, I'd like to turn that over to Eric Anderson. What do you think of that? Why does a gay player have to come out at all, Eric?
Well, this individual, I mean, clearly he's steeped in heterosexism. He liked to call it not homophobia, but the reality is that our sexualities are not a private affair. When the government tries to institutionalize laws to prevent us from living the same equality as heterosexuals, it's clearly not a private affair. Individuals have the right to be who they are and to express themselves in America, the land of the free. If an athlete chooses to be in the closet, that's certainly his choice. But if an athlete chooses to come out of the closet, then this individual in American society has no constitutional right or no moral right to be protected from something they, quote, don't agree with. Really, we ought not give credence to this type of argument. This is an archaic argument of 50 years ago. We use the same arguments with African Americans. Let's move on. And really, you know what David was saying was when he came out as an openly gay athlete, David Coppé, that mm-hmm. is, he was fighting these social justice battles. Well, the social justice battles have been mostly fought. We're winning most of them. And so a gay athlete today wouldn't necessarily be expected to be a political leader. He would simply be expected to be a good or just who he is as a gay athlete. And that makes it a little bit easier for a gay athlete who comes out of the closet today. He would get sponsorships. He would have tremendous support. He would be a hero in the gay and lesbian community. And so really it's sort of like, okay, guys, it's time for this now. Somebody, come on out.
Can I put a last question to you here, Eric? Why do you
Sure.
think there's the difference between women and men? Because more women are out of the closet than men in sport.
Well, you have to remember that sports were started in the United States as a way to help indoctrinate men into this extreme form of masculinity that was supposed to make them heterosexual and good warriors and so forth and so on. So women who violated that masculine terrain were assumed to be masculinized, i.e., homosexualized. And men who played sports were heterosexualized. So that stigma exists today. Now, also, you know, women found a safe sort of an ironically safe space, lesbian women found an ironically safe space in certain sports in the 1970s. And so these sort of stereotypes remain today, that if you're a female athlete, you're homosexual, and if you're a male athlete, you're heterosexual. And, of course, the situation is much more complex than that.
Right,
and
that,
there are gay and lesbian athletes at all levels of sport.
I'd just like to give a last comment to you, John Wertheim. In the time that we have remaining here, we talked about what the players might think. Are there any plans just to take this poll that was done and see what the players think of it, or poll them?
Well,
what's your next assignment?
I would love to see it, and I think it's coming. And I think Eric had a really good point earlier that with his sort of dog years analogy, that through popular culture and through sort of political awareness, I mean, this issue is really, we're nowhere near where we were, 10 years ago, much less, 1975 when David Coppé came out. And I think, this issue is only going to pick up momentum, and I do think, it's coming that an athlete's going to come out. I'd love to see athletes take this exact same poll, but I don't have that data on me now, unfortunately.
And meanwhile, we wait for the man who would be first.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us tonight, John.
Thanks.
John Wertheim is a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, and thank you to Eric Anderson, a professor of sociology at SUNY Stony Brook. You can continue the conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Jennifer Westaway. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Cardinale Ratzinger.
I signori cardinali hanno eletto me un semplice, umile lavoratore nella vigna del Signore.
The church is today because of the scriptures and because of the tradition of who we are and of what we must do to be faithful. They're going to find in Benedict XVI the man who's faithful to that tradition.
What I've heard today, and again, I apologize. Many of my colleagues here today have heard a lot more. But I don't feel comfortable voting today on Mr. John Bolton. And maybe it would be in the best interest of this committee to take a little bit more time.
Prices at the pump at this station or other stations around the country aren't going to drop tomorrow or next week or next month because of this bill. But we know that if we had passed this legislation 2 years ago or 4 years ago, as we had hoped to do, we wouldn't be facing many of the energy problems that we're facing in our country right now.
And unbelievably, this Republican bill would actually increase gas prices by 3 cents per gallon, according to the Bush administration's own energy department. Apparently, this Republican majority believes you need to pay more for gasoline.
There has been much, have been questions about my health, and that is a factor as well. I am feeling the aches and pains that come with when you reach 70.
Our state needs to implement our practices and care for our children. Unfortunately, this federal legislation has set us up for failure. There is no way that we are ever going to have 100% of children at grade level.
The Democratic-controlled Senate gave the final approval to it, and about an hour later, Governor Jody Rell, a Republican, signed the bill. And so Connecticut is now the second state to recognize same-sex civil unions and the first to do so without court pressure.
Those sounds from the week were Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger of Germany elected Pope Benedict XVI. Ohio Republican Senator George Voinovich votes with Democrats to force a delay on President Bush's nominee as UN Ambassador John Bolton. The House approves President Bush's energy bill. Vermont Independent Senator Jim Jeffords announces he will not seek re-election. The Utah legislature votes to effectively ignore President Bush's No Child Left Behind plan. And Connecticut becomes the third state to recognize same-sex unions and the first to do so without court pressure. Jack Beattie, what's on your mind this week?
Well, President Bush seems to be set up for three defeats. We don't know, but the tea leaves don't look good on three fronts: Social Security, John Bolton, and his judicial nominees, at least these 10. On Social Security, I heard the head of the Cato Institute last week speak of privatization in the past tense as something that it isn't going to happen. And there's already talk from the White House about pivoting, that the president is now going to pivot to dealing simply with the problem of the deficit in Social Security.
As opposed to backtrack.
As opposed to backtrack, and really try to cover his tracks. And, you know, if this is true, you have to wonder why. And I think one clear reason is that he has done what he said he wanted to do. He has dramatized, in fact, he's over-dramatized, that there is a problem, a long-term problem with the system. But every time he said that, every newspaper I've read said, and the solution he has mentioned so far, privatization, does nothing to deal with that problem.
Right.
And I think the public said, well, wait a minute. And of course, there are other reasons. But fundamentally, he was talking himself out of his own program every time he talked about how bad the problem was and then didn't come up with a solution. He may be able to get something out of this quite creditably in terms of, you know, setting the program going and dealing with this small gap, which will be an achievement, but it won't be privatization.
And speaking of ideas that had a little trouble getting traction, a setback this week for John Bolton.
Yes, and you know, a rare moment where one senator actually listened to another. George Voinovich listened to Chris Dodd and to Joe Biden make passionate speeches full of detail about John Bolton and about how he humiliated people, how he browbeat, how he was really a kind of bureaucratic tyrant who wasn't above firing people or trying to get people fired who merely disagreed with him on policy. And that change seemed to actually affect his mind as he was listening to them. And I thought, well, that's something. You know, they talk about the world's greatest deliberative body, and there was somebody deliberating. So Bolton looks like this isn't going to, I think the White House will probably be pulling away from him over the next couple of weeks, unless something comes out and it turns out he didn't do any of these things. But
right.
I think the evidence is starting to accumulate.
Okay. And are you going to be watching television on Sunday by any chance?
No, I'm not. But Dr. Frist, Bill Frist, who wants to run for president in 2008, is going to be on television. He's going to be on a program on the which basically is going to be talking about the how the Democrats, how God really wants the filibuster ended. God has told James Dobson to focus on the family. I want the filibuster over. And people who are for it, the senators who are filibustering the judges, the judicial nominees, these folks are godless. And Bill Frist is going to embrace this guy on this show. And, you know, Bush dealt with these people, but at arm's length through Karl Rove. Frist is actually going to be on their show. And this guy is, you know, well, let's put it this way. He likens proponents of gay marriage to the Nazis. He's backed political executions. He's backed candidates who call for the execution of abortion providers. Oh, and he calls embryonic stem cell research state-funded cannibalism. And he has this dominionist theology, which basically says, let's make the whole country Christian and rule the world.
And boy, this is someone Bill Frist is going to be standing beside on television.
And I don't think he's going to survive it in terms of his long-term political ambitions. And maybe it'll even tip the judicial fight the other way.
Jack, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Tim Skog, Michael Garth, and Angel Coselli. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Jennifer Westaway. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.